Well, hello there. This is David Wilcock, and we're doing an audio blog today. The reason why I'm doing this is because I'm seeing a lot of really positive changes happening in our world, and a lot of you have written me email asking me for more detail, and in many cases leaving me your telephone number. So I thought I would call you back, and in this way we can actually have a conversation. And I will try to address many of the things that you've been saying to me in the email most consistently. It's becoming clearer and clearer as more people write stuff on the internet and come out with videos and books and radio shows and so forth, that there's an increasing number of dire predictions about what the future holds and where this planet is going. I certainly have read them. I certainly have been familiar with these prophecies for a long time. In fact, the reason originally why I moved to Virginia Beach in October 1997 was that the noted psychic Edgar Cayce had a prophecy that there were going to be massive earth changes in 1998 and that Virginia Beach was a safety land, meaning that you would basically avoid things like tidal waves sweeping onto the land, things like earthquakes, etc., etc. I can tell you also that when you focus on these prophecies, it can become a really depressing experience, obviously. Your life becomes increasingly consumed with the question of your own basic survival, and you start finding that there are more and more websites you can read or books you can read where you will be given terrifying prophecies and a view of the future that is so bleak and so negative and dire that it seems as if there's no hope. We now find out that that Edgar Cayce prophecy I spoke about was actually influenced by a negative entity called Halaliel, spelled H-A-L-A-L-I-E-L. And I've written about this on my website, which is divinecosmos.com. Halaliel was what the source later referred to as a trickster entity, in that it greeted the group that Edgar was working with through his readings and gave them prophecies of doom. The reason why this happened, apparently, is because Edgar, as the channel, had lost his positive focus on the people that he was interacting with. In many cases, they were criticizing him because for his time, what he was doing was quite extraordinary. If you haven't heard the story before, Edgar Cayce has documented over 14,000 medical readings in which people would give him simply a name and an address and a promise that they would be at that place at a particular time the reading would happen. And with no other information, no other front-loading whatsoever, Cayce was able to be hypnotized and go into a deep trance state that he would not remember when he woke up. And in this trance state, he would actually speak more from the subconscious mind, or you could say the astral body, and basically go to where that person was, remotely viewing them. The person did not see anything in the room. There was no apparition, but he would go to that person's room and actually be able to enter into their body, see through to the organs and the various systems of the body, and diagnose the medical condition. And it was accurate. Over and over again, we're talking 99% out of 14,000 documented readings. Another point you don't often hear is that there's possibly as many as 5 or even 10,000 that were not preserved and were not actually saved. Part of it was because he had some fires or his houses burned down. Other parts of it were just that the readings were not actually documented word for word. It was only that the most important medical information was transcribed. So what medical information am I talking about? Well, not only did the source document these medical problems that people were having, it also gave them treatment. And the treatments in many cases were weird and unorthodox. But for the time, considering that antibiotics like penicillin had not yet been invented, in many cases it meant the difference between life and death for the people who received these readings. And time again, The mind was shown to be of critical importance in determining the problems that were happening in the body. There was no such thing as a health problem that was strictly a health problem. It was always the result of the body acting as a holographic mechanism that was then reflecting psychological issues people were wrestling with that they had not then cleansed in themselves. Now, if we want to expand the scope quite a bit, I've worked now in scientific areas of inquiry for many years in which it appears that the conclusion we can make is that that same process of how thoughts precipitate into the body is actually what's happening in the world. Think about that. The world itself appears to be sick, doesn't it? You could certainly say that. Think about the problems that we have with affordable health care. It's impossible to have health insurance without paying a huge amount of money. Think about the economic woes that we're seeing more and more of. Actually, this past week, there's been a lot of concern over Citibank and other banks that are having major write-offs and requesting billions and billions of dollars in aid to be able to keep from essentially collapsing. These are not idle concerns. This is a world that's changing. There have been seasonal climate changes in the past, that is true, but the amount of climate change that we're seeing now and the speed with which it's changing is unlike any other documented part of history. And one of the areas of research that I'm particularly proud of is when I worked with Richard C. Hoagland and combined together well over 100 different references from mainstream scientific sources like NASA, showing that in fact our entire solar system is experiencing climate change. It's not just the Earth. The Sun, for example, is having a greater sudden surge in its level of activity than we've seen basically in 11,000 years. And you can basically tick off every planet except Mercury. We haven't found a whole lot for Mercury. But every other planet besides Mercury, and in many cases several of the moons on those planets, if they have them, are showing really remarkable climate change. I'm not going to bore you with the details because that will be produced in a video that I'm going to be releasing freely on YouTube fairly soon. Don't ask me when. It's going to be out there when we can. But the point is that it's real. It's been documented. So if you want to go check on that, you can. This is where we get into another interesting area. The idea that an energy change in the solar system does not simply refer to an increase in the heat level of the planets or the brightness of the planets or the magnetic field strength, etc., which is the kind of changes that I'm describing in each planet. What if these energetic increases in the solar system were also related to consciousness? And that might seem far-fetched at first until you start looking back at what we now know from quantum mechanics and many other types of information like that, where consciousness, the observer, the person observing your experiment in quantum mechanics, has a noticeable effect on the outcome of the experiment. Whether you think something is going to happen one way or another, and then you set up the experiment that way, that will determine how the experiment turns out. And this is very strange, and it's still considered fringe. Of course, as you've heard me mention, the film What the Bleep Do We Know was a breakaway success in that it discussed these things, which actually have been around since the 70s. There was a book by Gary Zukav called Dancing Woolly Masters. And most of the material that you see in Bleep was based on that book, which I believe was around 1978 when it came out. There's been a lot more research that's been done since that time of the sort of enshrinement of quantum physics and the wave-particle duality. The idea that electrons can act as particles and as waves. That's one of the basis points of this quantum mechanics model. So if you can stick with me here, what we're talking about fundamentally is a change in the solar system. And if consciousness and energy are interconnected, then quid pro quo, a change in the solar system also refers to a change in consciousness. And here's another thing that I've been writing about quite a bit that you can research more on my website, divinecosmos.com. And that is the evolution of species on this planet. We have, for example, a fossil record that goes back some 545 million years. And during that time, if you didn't know better, you would think that evolution has been gradual, that the fossils show gradual changes from one species to another, and that basically you get this ongoing, slow evolutionary process. Well, believe it or not, that's actually not what happens. Instead, what we see is really remarkable changes in very short periods of time, geologically speaking. And these really remarkable changes include irreconcilable gaps in the fossil record where you have advancements that occur in the species as they evolve, where there's no intermediate step. In other words, they basically jump from one sort of creature to another. One experience that I've had is coming into contact with a scientist from Russia named Peter Gariev, who's actually done some really phenomenal research with DNA. And one of the most phenomenal points that he raises, which I continue to bring up over and over again, is that he was able to take two hermetically sealed containers with a salamander embryo in one container and a frog embryo in the other. So that's all you have. Then he took a non-burning laser, shined it through the salamander embryo, and then redirected that light into where the frog embryo was. You might think that nothing much would happen in any conventional scientific model. It shouldn't. But instead, it was a very remarkable change. The frog embryo completely metamorphosized. And as the cells kept dividing and the embryo kept growing, it grew into a salamander. And all it ever received was the light code, whatever the DNA vibration or the DNA harmonic was that had gotten into that light beam. That was then conveyed from one area to the other. So if you think about wave-particle duality, you could say that the DNA is like a particle, right? But the particle could also be like a wave. And when it becomes a wave, you can shine that laser beam from one container to the other and transfer the information of the DNA as a particle. And apparently, we're seeing that DNA has a receptive quality, much like an antenna for consciousness. And it's able to receive that information and be rewritten. This, of course, also gets into the work that Bruce Lipton keeps bringing up, Dr. Bruce Lipton, regarding the Cambridge medical doctor John Kearns. And Kearns did a study with lactose intolerant bacteria, meaning bacteria that cannot digest lactose. You would think that if you took these bacteria and placed them inside an environment where all they had was lactose around them, that they would die because they couldn't digest that food. There's nothing in there that they can use. Their mouth parts actually didn't even fit the polysaccharide molecule of the lactose. Well, this is what's so strange. The actual DNA of these bacteria changed. And it changed so dramatically that it actually evolved their mouth parts so that their mouth was now able to close over these polysaccharide molecules properly so that it could actually eat them and digest them. And they survived. They adapted. They grew. In fact, there's another study that I haven't had the chance to publish yet that actually came out in National Geographic regarding a very primitive form of life called a sea squirt. And these are just single tube hearts inside these sea squirts. It's a very, very primitive organism. It's just, if you can imagine, like a straw, and the straw has some muscular contractions that pump the blood through the body of this creature. Well, in this case, these scientists were able to shine a particular form of light, a particular light beam, into the developing sea squirt, and trigger a spontaneous metamorphosis within a conceivable amount of time that it would take for it to grow, in which it developed a double-chambered heart. and actually evolved spontaneously through nothing more than the burst of light. Well, getting back to Dr. Robert Rode and these scientists that have been looking at the evolutionary record, what we're seeing is that species are evolving on Earth, not all at once, but in sudden spurts. And these sudden spurts don't just happen randomly and sporadically, they happen in cycles. And the cycle, in the original case with Dr. David Rope and Dr. James Sepkoski, two University of Chicago paleontologists, these jumps occurred in 26 million year intervals. And they kept hitting the books harder and harder. They came up with the most fastidious, incredible collection of data of marine life and how they evolved in the various layers of rock. And the more data they got, the more clear this pattern became. There was no way they could get rid of it. In fact, the harder they tried to get rid of it, the more it showed up. So this shows us that there's something fundamental going on here. Now, at that time, there were theories going around in terms of what this could possibly be. One of the theories is that there was a large object, which at the time was called Nemesis. And this would be some sort of planet-sized asteroid, if you will, or something like that, that would sweep through on a 26-million-year orbit, which, again, we're going to get into that. It's totally impossible. But a 26-million-year orbit that would then sweep through the solar system and cause Earth changes so as to trigger species die-off, which then somehow triggers evolution. Well, now, back up a second. Let's talk about, again, Dr. Gariev and what we were describing with how the DNA of the salamander completely was able to be transferred into a frog embryo by nothing more than a beam of light, and that the frog embryo mutated in a positive way so as to become a salamander. That suggests something much more sublime and profound than simply the hard collision of a planetary-sized object moving past our solar system. A planetary-sized object would not have the type of depth of information necessary to be able to instill genetic changes by some sort of intelligent transfer. Furthermore, the orbit of the entire galaxy is only around 225 million years in length. And everything that we see, all the stars and so forth, essentially stay in fixed positions as it goes around. So the idea that something could be moving that much on that extended of an orbit is really problematic. And now we have also the work of Dr. Robert Rode from UC Berkeley, who went back to Rope and Sepkoski's same set of marine data, the data that they spent so many years cataloging, to try to figure out whether this evolutionary pattern was real or not. And Dr. Robert Rode found another cycle in it, which is existing at the same time as the 26-million-year cycle, and it actually goes farther back in time. 26-million-year cycle only goes back about 200-250 million years, where you can see it clearly. Whereas this other cycle, which is actually closer to 65 million years, that cycle goes all the way back to the dawn of evolution of life on Earth as we know it. Because prior to that point, it's called the Precambrian era, and all you see is rock, and there's no critters in it. But then from that point forward, you get these very clean, very nice and neat 65 million year intervals in which everything on Earth is transforming. And that's pretty cool. And what's even more cool is that when you actually start crunching the numbers, you discover pretty quickly that there are neat cycles of how all these numbers mesh with the orbit of the galaxy. In other words, it appears that the easily divisible numbers that we're getting show that it's a galactic cycle, because they all chop up nice and neatly so that you get an even number of them for each time the galaxy spins on its axis. So we are dealing with a galactic cycle. Now here's another interesting piece of information that helps to confirm that. There was a doctor, James Spottiswood, who came from one of these California universities. I forget which one right now. Again, what you're hearing is all improv. I'm not reading off of any piece of paper. This is just a spontaneous lecture for you. Anyway, Dr. James Spottiswood went through 20 years of research into ESP, anomalous cognition, remote viewing, Zener cards, Ganzfeld, all these laboratory studies of the human psychic function. And what he was looking for is a universal time factor, something that could keep on showing up from time after time, which would help to establish a basis for somehow a time of the day where your psychic ability would get better. He wanted to see if, for example, high noon, if the sun is right overhead, if that would allow you to be more psychic. So he basically took all these studies, put them all together, but he was not able to find any particular piece of information that told him that there was going to be something happening on a particular day at a particular time. Until he looked at what's called sidereal time. Now, sidereal time is the time that it takes the sun to spin once. I'm sorry, the time that it takes the Earth to orbit relative to the center of the galaxy rather than to the sun. And that's a little bit different than the time that it takes us to rotate around the sun, because the solar system is moving through the galaxy, so our relative position to the galactic center is changing, not just based on the Earth's rotation and revolution. So sidereal time is not something that you can just have fixed at a certain point. It actually does change from day to day. So you need to keep checking it if you're going to go looking for this. Now, it appears that at 13 hours and 30 minutes local sidereal time, meaning where sidereal time is for you, wherever you are, that your psychic ability shoots up by 400%. Now that's a really, really phenomenal piece of information. Because what that's telling us is that you could be sitting there in your house having no knowledge that these energy fields are affecting you in any way. And yet, during this particular time of the day, where, as it so happens, your position on the Earth aligns you directly with the center of the galaxy. Okay, that's a very important point. You're aligned with the center of the galaxy. Then it's almost as if there's a hairdryer blowing on you. If you could think of the center of the galaxy as if it's like a stream of air or wind, and you're like a windsock. Well, when you catch that wind the strongest, when you're right in its path, then all of a sudden, you become a lot more psychic. You have a lot more psychic ability. That's really astonishing. And that suggests very strongly that our mind is being affected by an outside energy field, and that this energy field somehow has the ability to affect how psychic we can be. In addition to probably our level of intelligence and who knows what, the level of health of the body, certainly there's other studies that show that. So again, this is just yet another study telling us that consciousness is not just locked within the mind. It's actually an energy field that reverberates throughout the whole cosmos. And it's an energy field that has varying degrees of density in various locations. Now, you may or may not have heard about Professor John R.R. Searle, S-E-A-R-L, who developed in the 1960s a flying disc. And this is very strange but true. He found out that he could design a particular set of magnetic rings and rollers, and that they would essentially begin rotating when you pushed them a little bit. And they would begin self-accelerating, and they would go faster and faster. So with a very, very small amount of energy input, you would actually get essentially a free energy system. The system would go up to a certain speed of rotation, which was sort of like a critical speed, at which point the ship would then lose its gravitational attraction to the Earth, and it would begin rising. In fact, some of the earliest prototypes would smash up into the ceiling when he did that. Now, for a long time, people were saying that Searle was just a wacko, that none of the stuff that he was saying could possibly be true. However, if you Google Searle on the videos or in YouTube, you will discover that he has now built working prototypes of the actual ring and roller model. Now, these are not levitating yet, because they can't reach that level of speed. But what they are doing is showing you that he can push them with his finger just barely enough to get them moving. And they begin going faster and faster and faster and faster and faster. And you are literally watching in front of your very eyes a free energy device, because there's no way that that little push by the finger could cause that much energy, that much rotation. Now, why do I bring this up? Originally, Searle's technology involved designing these magnets that were on the rollers in such a way that there was a cross beam of magnetic fields inside the magnet. So the magnet normally has a north pole and a south pole, but then he also designed it so that as he was making the magnets, as the magnets are actually being machined in the factory, that there's also the introduction of a perpendicular magnetic field, which would be north to south going left to right, as opposed to top to bottom. Now that sort of perpendicularity of magnetic fields is a very, very important principle for accessing this higher dimensional energy field, as we call it, or the ether or the torsion wave, whatever you want to call it. The interference of magnetic fields when they're at perpendicular angles to each other is essentially part of what's gating in energy from this higher dimension. There are plenty of scientists who have showed us that the amount of energy in the universe is so incredibly vast that if you could tap it in its purest form and you even had one teacup full of it, that you could literally boil off all the world's oceans instantaneously. So physical matter obviously has a lot of that energy in it. If you look at a nuclear explosion, that's the releasing of a particularly dense form of physical matter like uranium or plutonium. And look at the amount of energy that's released when you do that. So certainly most matter doesn't have quite that degree of concentration, but there's a lot of energy locked up in matter. And so that also indicates to us that we have an enormous potential. There's so much potential that we're not using. And what if our mind was the gateway to this higher energy? What if our thoughts and our consciousness could somehow magnetize this incredible energetic pressure that surrounds us in such a way that we could affect real changes in our lives? That's what this is all leading up to. I'm not wasting your time telling you about these things, because fundamentally speaking, you are part of this energy system. As you listen to my words as I'm speaking to you right now, you are living in an energetic universe. There is energy that is alive and conscious surrounding you right now. And you can take a few deep breaths, let yourself center, feel that energy coursing through you right now. I'm telling you a lot of cosmic things, and all of this is basically just a preemptive view of the kind of things you'll hear in my Science of Peace MP3 series on my website. This consciousness is real. We have the science to prove it. And I'm just giving you a handful of many, many scientific experiments to prove this. So let's talk a little bit more about the anti-gravity device and why it's so important. The device was replicated by two Russian scientists named Roshin and Godin. R-O-S-C-H-I-N and G-O-D-I-N. And when you look up what these guys did, they did not machine the magnets to have this crosswise pattern in them of magnetic fields. Instead, what they did is they actually combined already existing magnets together and essentially glued them together so that they would have strips that would go north to south in one direction and then strips that would go north to south in a crosswise direction. The problem is that when you begin accelerating that system, because the magnets are not machined out of a single piece, they actually destroy. They actually break before you can reach the critical mass of velocity necessary to get liftoff. However, they have noticed gravitational reduction. So this is very important. This shows us that scientists have replicated Searle's research, discovered the same thing, gotten it to work the same way, gotten a reduction in gravity, and were able to do this in the laboratory under very controlled conditions. Now, this is where it gets really important. Roshin and Godin, when they built this device, discovered that there were a series of what they referred to as domain walls that surrounded the device once you turned it on. Well, what the hell are domain walls? Domain walls are not something you can see necessarily, although there is apparently a tube of pinkish plasma gas that appears around the machine as you power it up in the form of like a donut almost. It's called a torus. Now, these domain walls were actually noticeable in two different ways. First of all, they were magnetic fields. And second of all, they had a reduction in temperature. They were colder. And you could actually stick a thermometer into them and you'd watch the thermometer go down. Now, you couldn't see them, but they were nested like an onion, like layers of an onion around this machine as it was running. And therefore, what you're actually seeing is spheres within spheres, sort of like the nested dolls that the Russians call the Mastryoshka, where you pop off the head of one doll and there's another doll inside, and then you pop off that one, there's another one inside of that. Well, the universe sort of works like that when you're dealing with energy fields. And in fact, it's those kind of standing waves, those kind of spherical energy fields that are holding the planets in orbit. Obviously, not all the planets have a perfectly round orbit, but also there's pressure on them from the fact that our sun is pushing its way through the galaxy. And then the galaxy pushes against our solar system, creating what looks like a windsock. It's called the heliosphere. And that heliosphere, of course, has pressure on it, and the pressure pushes the orbits of the planets so that they're not perfectly round. But nonetheless, you're dealing with spheres within spheres in the solar system. So one of my discoveries was that what you're seeing with Roshin and Godin's discovery, where you get these sudden spherical areas expanding away from the center of this device, where you get higher magnetic concentration and lower temperature, is you're dealing with an energetic process that occurs at every level of complexity, from the atom, which would then be the, you know, the shells where the electrons are orbiting, all the way up through like fruits, for example, where you have seeds in the center, which would be one layer, then you have the fruit part, then you have the interior of the skin, then the exterior of the skin. These are layers. You look at the interior of the Earth, rather, and you see layers within the Earth. There's a core, there's a mantle, then there's lithosphere, and then crust. And those are the most basic layers, but then there's also sublayers within those layers. Similarly, as I said, there's the orbits of the planets in the solar system and the orbits of the moons around the planets. And then you go out to the galaxy, and this is where it gets really interesting. And I've tried to write about this many times, and I'll probably do a video about all this stuff in the future. In fact, probably in the near future. You can look at other galaxies, and there is a certain particular quality of microwave radiation that comes off of galaxies when you look at them through a telescope. And it's just energy, and most astronomers call it redshift. Now, they typically take those redshift values, those energy values, and they say, oh, okay, well, if this galaxy has a redshift of 5, then that means it's 5 units away. And if this galaxy over here has a redshift of 7, then that means it's 7 units away. So you follow, right? This is energy levels that they believe equate with distance. Now, here's the problem, though. If you actually look at these galaxies, you might have a 1 at the edge, and then a 2, and then a 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 as you go closer to the center. So that means that there's layers of this energy vibration that you can actually measure with telescopes inside the galaxies. This was all started by the work of Dr. William Tift, although it was alluded to with the work of Dr. Halton Arp, who was the first to show that redshift could not be a function of distance. Now, it's true that the astronomy community has not embraced this research, and part of the reason why is that redshift is the main tool they use to determine how far away a galaxy is, or any other celestial body for that matter. So the last thing they want to do is have all of their careful work completely overturned and have to start over, realizing how little we know about how far away something might be. But that's what's actually happened. Any time that you actually look at a galaxy with a telescope, you see striations, you see layers, just like what I'm describing with these domain walls. So you follow me? We're dealing with energetic walls that are showing up in these galaxies as different levels of microwave vibration. Now, it gets even more interesting. Now, check this out. And this is, again, something that I've written about. If you go on my site and you click on the button that says Start Here, my website, again, is www.divinecosmos.com. Click on the button that says Start Here. Go down to a section that says Articles and Books. Click on that. Go to The Divine Cosmos, which is the third book of Convergence. Click on that. Go to Chapter 8, which is the Transformation of the Solar System. And if you read that chapter, you will see research that I put out online as early as, I guess it was April 2002 now, where I described all the things that I'm talking to you about. Solar system change and galactic energy fields, all this stuff. This is not new. I've been talking about this for years. This is where it gets really weird. As we're saying, redshift, they believe that it's distance. But if you have the center of the galaxy showing you a 7, and I'm simplifying the number, but if you have a center of a galaxy showing you a 7, and then it goes 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 as you go out towards the edge, kind of like the grooves in a record album or something, then how in the world could that be telling you how far away those different pieces of the galaxy are? That would mean that every single galaxy in the entire universe is positioned in such a way that it's like a cone that expands away from where we are. And that's right back to flat Earth theory, and it's simply not true. We are not that unique. We certainly are very special, but we're not that unique. It doesn't make any sense. These are galaxies. We know what it looks like because we have one, and we can study our own in the Milky Way and so forth. We know that it sits in one place. It's not spread out over millions and billions of miles of interstellar space. So, why am I even bothering to tell you all this stuff, and is it worth listening to all this science? I believe that it is, and here's why. Dr. Harold Aspdin is another researcher who got into these free energy and anti-gravity type of inquiries. And what makes Dr. Aspdin different from many other scientists is that in this case, he actually wrote up a whole new model of science backed up with extensive equations, which essentially draw off of electromagnetic equations. Electrical engineering is still using equations going back to the time of Maxwell and Heaviside, and these equations actually show you right out in the open that there is a cosmic energy field that electricity is simply a subset of. Now, Aspdin actually proves that extensively with equations, and he's put it out all out free on his website, which, as of the last time I checked, was energyscience.co.uk. It may have changed, but that's what it was a couple years ago. Now, here's what's really, really cool. Aspdin discovered that this cosmic energy field I'm talking about had different densities, different thicknesses. It's not like you just have one energy field that stays the same, that never changes throughout all time. No, these energy fields actually do change. They do have different thicknesses. So some of them might be more almost gaseous. Some of them might be more liquid. Some of them might be more solid. And I'm just speaking in terms of the thickness. When I say density, that's what I want you to see. is the, you know, the difference between a solid, liquid, or gas. Okay. So you have these different thicknesses, and he actually came up with equations where he was able to calculate, if you see this frequency of microwave energy, then your energy, your cosmic energy, is at this density, this frequency. If you see this frequency of microwave energy, then you have this density of cosmic energy, et cetera, et cetera. When he looked for these numbers in terms of the universe, in terms of the galaxy, or whatever galaxy you're observing, he found that they were precisely the same as these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 numbers I'm describing that you get inside galaxies. They were down to the decimal point. Because Tift, as we said, was looking at these redshift numbers, looking at these frequencies of energy, and found that they did not occur just randomly, that there were only certain values that you kept seeing. They were called, he called it quantized, meaning you see one value, then it immediately jumps up to another value, immediately jumps up to another value, and there's nothing in between. Similar to, right, how in an atom, you're either in one electron shell or the other, but there's no in between. The electron builds up a charge, and it, up until it gets exactly the right amount of energy to shift, it doesn't shift. But as soon as it reaches that tipping point, boom, it pops into the next layer, the next frequency. So that's what's happening with galactic energy fields. It's very much like the atom. And we now have the scientific proof for that, and I'm just giving you a brief overview of it. So, now you have to expand your knowledge even further. And let's consider the fact that these energy fields would actually be akin to chakras in the galaxy, galactic chakras, okay? If the galaxy itself is conscious, right? We've already said before that you get 400% more conscious psychic access when you're aligned with the center of the galaxy on Earth. That was one of the studies I gave you from Dr. James Spottiswood. If that's true, then this energy in the galaxy, these different walls of frequency, could literally be frequencies of consciousness, frequencies of evolution. And I propose this. What if these walls are gradually expanding away from the center of the galaxy? And as they expand away from the center, they move through solar systems just like ours. Our solar system essentially stays in one place. We go round and round the same circle. But these energy walls keep expanding away from the center, kind of like an expanding puff of, it's like a smoke ring or something. And then as that ring collides with our solar system, as we crash into it, then guess what happens? Interplanetary climate change. The sun gets hotter, brighter, more magnetic. The planets get hotter, brighter, more magnetic. One of the things we have seen, actually, is a 300% increase in the amount of dust that entered into the solar system just in two short years after the year 2000. And that was more than, that was 300% more than the entire 1990s had been. These are real facts. This is not supposition. This is not speculation. We are dealing with a galactic energy field. It's a full halo expanding energy field that goes through the entire galaxy. And when it reaches us, it causes changes in our solar system. It causes activation of our DNA molecule. And that, my friends, is what's causing these 65 million year cycles and 26 million year cycles of species evolution in the fossil record. I keep trying to tell the world about this science because it's all done with top-level PhDs. You just take one guy and another guy and you put their work together and this is what you get. So far, it really hasn't stuck. Nobody else has written about it than me. And at the time that I'm doing this recording, it's January 19th, 2008. And I've had it out there for 6 years almost and still, you know, very little response. But it doesn't change the fact that it's true, and it doesn't change the fact that this is what's really happening. So, we're at the end of the 65 million year cycle that Dr. Rowe discovered. In fact, we're overdue. And I'm sorry, I just remembered it's a 62 million year cycle, not 65. So we're 3 million years overdue. And the other important point with that is our climate change right now would be akin to an energetic charge that's increasing, much in the same way that the energy beam of the laser shines through the salamander embryo into the frog embryo. It's an increase in energy. It's an increase in charge that causes evolution to occur. That's the basis of it. That's where it's coming from. And again, the reason why I'm giving this recording away to you is not because I don't need to earn money. I do. Everybody does. And I've written things on my website that you can order as a download. You can hear a lot more of this science I'm talking about as a Science of Peace series, which has wonderful music that we composed in the background. But I also need to just give things away because it's too important for you to know this. It's too important that this knowledge become mainstream, or at least that the people who need to know it and want to know it can have access to it. I don't want to hold anything back from you. Now, so many of you have been writing me and you've asked me questions about this, that, and the other subject. There's a lot of fear about what's going on in the planet right now. There's a lot of fear about our world and the changes that are happening in our world. So I want to try to ease some of your fear and ease some of your suspicion by reminding you that there are ancient prophecies in every culture throughout human history that talk about a time where there was going to be great strife, great climate changes, weather changes, political changes, social changes, and that this was a precursor to a golden age on Earth. That this was all a preliminary step building up to the point where you would be able to change your consciousness, change your perspective, actualize your full potential, and become the person that the Creator, this intelligent universal energy field, wanted you to be. Ultimately, I believe there is no place in the universe that is outside the Creator. There is no place that is outside this living consciousness because it literally is everywhere. That's why my website is called Divine Cosmos. The cosmos itself is God. God is everywhere, every when, everything you see, everything you feel, everything you touch, everything you experience. And therefore, you are above no one, but you are also below no one. That's a really important point. Everyone is equal, ultimately. We're all progressing. Everything I've given you so far is scientific, and it also bridges over into the esoteric, insofar as all of the original philosophical underpinnings of the model that I'm now explaining to you scientifically came out of a series of works that were channeled much like the Edgar Cayce readings I was talking about at the beginning. This channeling was done in 1981 to 83. The material is called the Law of One. And you can actually read all of these Law of One readings on a website, which is www.lawofone.info. Now, that website actually has a search engine, and you can read the transcripts of these 106-some-odd sessions of this material that came through. Now, I'm not trying to promote any particular source of channeling as being better than any other. All I'm trying to say is that there is ageless wisdom. There is a certain amount of knowledge that is just intrinsic to the cosmos. And various people tap into this ageless wisdom throughout history in various ways. Many of them have, in history, become enshrined as great spiritual and religious teachers. And they end up having movements that are created based on the work that they bring through. Now, it may or may not be that they had the one and only way. I think that's a pretty limited viewpoint, because what seems to happen is that each person will access what we might call intelligent infinity or ageless wisdom differently. Because you're going to have a lens, you're going to have a filter that is your own perspective, your own bias. And you read that bias into your experience. So whatever pre-existing limitations that you impose upon what you think God is, those limitations might come through in your channeling or in your research. So if you have sexual hang-ups, for example, if you're homophobic, or if you basically think that, you know, certain things are gross, you know, like the Hindus, for example, say that the cow is sacred, you can't eat the cow. other, like in the Hebrew tradition, you're not supposed to eat pork. It's not kosher. Some people believe you can have sex before marriage. Some people think you have to have a legal contract before you can have sex. All these things may be contingent upon the social background of the person getting the information, because they're apt to say things and hear things that are going to conform with what their perspective is going in. And I believe it's very important that when you're looking at channeling, the kind of research and material that people are putting out on the internet, that for a large part, you don't view it as factual. There's a lot of information out there that is inspired to some degree or another by someone's conscious mind. And they have read certain things that they then believe are true, like the idea that there's 12 strands of DNA, or that there's many, many dimensions, much more than just the basic octave of 8 dimensions that's given in the Law of One series. You have every different channeler seems to have a different sort of cosmic drama of good guys and bad guys and ETs from this planet and ETs from that planet. And it all becomes terribly confusing and terribly contradictory. The reason why I don't tell you not to read this stuff is because anyone who goes to a place of inspiration is going to tap into this ageless wisdom to some degree or another. It's always out there. It's always part of who you are. It's part of your potential. It's part of your beingness, part of your makeup. So you have a divine right to be able to access that ageless wisdom and to tune to it. And so when you read things that are uplifting and positive and talk about the limitless potential that you have and talk about the wonderful change that's happening in the solar system and the idea that perhaps 2012 is the focal point of all that change, which does appear to be true, that's great. If, however, you start reading material that is describing fear and doom and gloom, basically suggesting to you that you're not protected, that this is all leading up to some sort of cataclysm or Armageddon, where plagues or famines or diseases or economic collapse or Illuminati or government conspiracy, bread lines and, oh my gosh, there's so much of this stuff out there, isn't there? One thing after another. You just read, oh, they're going to put you in the concentration camp and they're going to give you a microchip under your skin and you're not going to be able to eat unless you have this microchip. And honestly, I got to tell you, none of this stuff is going to happen. If you look at these negative elite, as they're called, the so-called Illuminati, there are basically two main factions. It appears that the European-based faction is run by the Rothschilds, that the American-based faction is run by the Rockefellers. I had already encountered this information before Benjamin Fulford came out with his material, and when the Fulford stuff came out, it only further confirmed what I already had been hearing. If you look at what's happening, all of the institutions that are built for these people are collapsing. For example, Hollywood is a major propaganda arm. You've seen many movies that are trying to promote a really depressing worldview. ETs as being these rogue aliens that are going to invade and kill us. So many movies that come out where people are heartless and vicious and cruel killers with no compassion. And it's all programming. It's all passive programming that gets you thinking, wow, we're not protected. We are alone and helpless, and the only people that can help us is our leaders, right? Our leaders. So there actually is a plan if you talk to people, and I have, who were inside the Illuminati and got out, such as this woman, Savali, who's a whistleblower that's been on the internet. I actually had conversations with this woman. She told me in no uncertain terms that they are planning on what they call the revealing. They want to reveal their identity to the planet. They have a lot of this cosmic information that I've been describing to you, not precisely as I've been describing it to you, but they certainly know about what they would refer to as radiant mind energy, and they have negative techniques that they use in order to harness that energy. I really wouldn't worry about these guys, because one of the things Savali said in her testimonies is that most of the people in this group don't want to be in it. They're in it, but they're stuck in it, and if they tried to get out, they would be killed. And of course, some of you that are listening to this are in the family, or Mariah, or the Order of Ancient Philosophers. There's so many different names for it. If you're in that group, I would just encourage you to recognize that things are changing. You don't have to keep playing the game anymore because everybody else is thinking the same thing you're thinking. The plans are certainly vast in scope. There's a great lust for power and a great desire to be able to be seen by the world as leaders. But honestly, too many people are hip to it now, and they don't like the philosophy. They don't like the underpinnings of the teachings about what we would call service to self behavior. So there's never going to be a time where this sort of benevolent dictatorship can take over the planet. It just simply won't happen. There's too many people who are too mobilized by campaigns like Ron Paul for president and all the stuff that's been read on the internet. You can't come out with a revealing and expect that everybody's just going to toe the party line and want to be part of this great effort that you think you're doing. Now, personally, I don't have anything against you if you're in this group, and that's an important point. It's your decision how you want to believe and what you want to feel is reality. So if you want to be in this group, that's fine. But a lot of you are in the group because you have to be and you can't get out, and I understand that. So I'm not saying that you should risk your life to get out, but what I am saying is that there's going to be a point where there will be a mass revolt. And I would encourage you not to be afraid, because when it starts happening, it's going to happen so fast that they won't be able to harass you. They won't be able to come after you. And it's pointless. You know, the financing of these organizations is running out. That's why you're seeing the big banks in trouble. And anybody who's out there writing articles, acting as if all these weird plans that they have are actually going to come true, is simply not dealing with reality. They're not dealing with the fact that we have moved into a new energy field in the galaxy that's permeating our solar system. It's changing consciousness, it's evolving who we are, and it's moving us towards unconditional love. That's a really important point. Unconditional love is where this energy is going. And because we're moving into that frequency, you have the opportunity to see the shadow. The Illuminati ultimately is the representation of humanity's collective shadow side that has been buried within, that is now externalizing. And in much the same way you see these prophecies about Planet X, and they're trying to blame the whole solar system change on Planet X, they're trying to say this planet is going to sweep by our planet, and it's going to cause a pole shift and we're all going to die. Well, what I've tried to explain to you now is this model about galactic energy fields, which is much more robust, much more explanatory about things like 62 million year and 26 million year evolution cycles, things like how the DNA could change, things like how your consciousness shifts and you become 400% more psychic when you're aligned with the center of the galaxy. All of these things are fundamentally interconnected. I've never seen any evidence that requires there to be a Planet X. There may be a larger planet outside on the periphery of our solar system, but I don't think that it actually crosses through the other planets, simply because the sun has harmonic beat frequencies it is putting out, which hold the planets in place. And any planet of that size would be caught up in one of these cells of frequency, and it would not be able to cross through all the other planets. This whole Planet X thing actually got started by Zechariah Sitchin, who was looking at the term Nibiru as the planet of crossing. Nibiru being the planet that allegedly the biblical Nephilim, as they're called, came from. The angels in the Bible, if you will. Or at least one form of them. Well, the planet of crossing could mean many things. It doesn't mean necessarily a planet that's crossing in its orbit. And I don't believe that's what's going on. So, if there is any way that we can start to put this Planet X thing to rest, I would appreciate that. Because people still write me email all the time saying, what do you think about Planet X? What do you think about Planet X? So let's just count this as my definitive statement so I don't have to keep repeating myself. I really don't think that Planet X is anything to be concerned with. And again, if someone is telling you that all of the stuff that you're seeing is leading up to a mass extinction or a mass death, it's just not true. We're dealing with a multidimensional evolution of the solar system, and I've only scratched the surface. If you really want to know more, I highly recommend that you download my MP3 series, The Science of Peace. You can find it on my website. There's two ways to get it. The first one is just the three lectures. They're each about CD length, which is like 67 minutes. If you get just the three by themselves, it's $39.99. And if you get the 5 MP3 set, you get 2 more CD length worth of just music. And that's not only the music that you hear in the background of the series, but it's also music that was composed after the fact based on what we already wrote. But then we added new guitar tracks and we added more spacey sections and so forth. And so that larger one is $59.99. We've had a lot of orders for that, and everybody's very happy with it. The shorter one is $39.99, as I said. If that's too expensive for you, there's another product you can get on my website called What Is My Purpose? It's $17.99. And that's actually an intuitive reading that I've done with music in the background. It has a 22-minute introduction and then a 45-minute reading, so it all fits into one CD. If you don't even want to spend that much money, you can actually download individual readings. The audio quality isn't as good, but they're only $3.33 a piece, and that's also available. Now, there's also an archive of MP3s on my site, which is 72, and it will be updated as I continue putting out more and more of these readings and audio blogs, etc. But there's already a lot of material in there now. There's a lot of radio shows I've done that you can't find anywhere else. There's public lectures that I've done that you can't find anywhere else. There's readings that I've done in there. In the future, I hope to have all the contents more accessible in terms of you can figure out what's in there. But the point is that that's actually more like a way if you want to hear some new stuff, hear some different stuff, and you don't want to have to keep on ordering over and over again when you get different products. You can go in there and get these unique radio shows and public lectures I've done and so forth, pay one price, download the material. Actually, we're probably going to be putting video in there pretty soon, too. Some stuff that you wouldn't be able to find anywhere else that way. So anyway, there's lots of different ways to help. Some people actually do just donate. I certainly can't do this without financing, so I do very much appreciate your help. Very much appreciate all of the positive feedback and the warm letters that you've sent me. It's really wonderful. I did want to make this about the length of the CD, so we're closing in on the last 5 or 6 minutes. So let's use the principle of retrocausality. Just go to a quiet place, and even though you're going to be hearing this in the future as I measure time, you can send information back to me now, and it will help determine what are the last few things that I want to talk about, because I've raised a lot of different subjects and we can go in a lot of different directions. And whatever you want to hear the most and the most number of you decide that you want to hear, we can actually tune that in now, and that will be how we end this little talk. So let's just do that for a second. Okay, so I think some of you want to hear more about the doom and gloom thing and how is it that I've become so confident? How is it that I believe so strongly that we're not going to have any disasters happen? As you may know, I've done a series of videos with Project Camelot. That's another thing you can look at. It's totally free. There's almost, 3.5 hours of video divided into 4 sections. Which you can find on projectcamelot.org, or you can find on my website, divinecosmos.com. And this is really some phenomenal material. A lot of people are really excited about it. We also just came out with a new one, the 5th part of the series called Jump Room to Mars. And that video kind of got cut off before we were able to finish. Now, I've actually been taking it pretty straightforward in this talk. I haven't really gone into the more esoteric material in terms of what some of these really deep-level black ops UFO witnesses have come forward with, people who allegedly worked in top-secret projects, reverse engineering, alien technology, etc. But I do go into that in these videos, and they're already available, so there's a lot of stuff you can hear about there. Now, Project Camelot more recently has been coming into contact with material that has a pretty doom-and-gloom portrait of the future. There are apparently people in our black government, our secret government, that have information leading them to believe that 2012 is going to be a mass cataclysm. And there's a politician from Norway, for example, who's suggesting that they have made extensive underground bases with these trains that are powered by some sort of crystal free energy technology, nothing that we would ever normally think of. But obviously, that would, if it's true, that would mean that technology doesn't pollute, so you don't spill fossil fuel emissions into your underground base. But there's apparently bullet trains down there, and that they've prepared for 2.2 million people from Norway to be able to go down there, but that means 2.5 will not be able to go down there, so it's kind of like a dividing. And what's even stranger is that he saw two tunnels, and one said human and the other said not human. So it appears that there's ETs that they're working with as well. He was apparently taken into this base as part of his tenure in the government of Norway. And now he's come forward, although he has not released his name publicly. He's concerned that they might be able to figure out who he is anyway. So I'm sure you're going to hear more and more of these stories. There's another guy by the name of Henry Deacon. That's his assumed name. I don't know what his real name is, but the point is that I almost had the chance to talk to him. It did fall through. Hopefully we could talk in the future. I have no interest in trying to give out classified information that would compromise national security. That's never been a focus of mine. I'm not that kind of person. But there's a lot of information that they know that doesn't really need to be secret anymore, because even if I tell you this information, it's not going to change anything. The mainstream media is pretty fixed in its perspective, and I don't expect that's going to suddenly change overnight. And most of this stuff is so fantastic that even if you tell people and you show them the proof, they're still not going to believe you, no matter what. So, doom and gloom, right? Some of these guys inside these government projects are saying, oh man, you know, it's going to be pole shifting, it's going to be Armageddon, it's going to be this, it's going to be that. Let's keep in mind that nobody knows exactly what's going to happen, because it hasn't happened yet. And even if they have technologies that could allow them to look forward in time and see a potential future, that doesn't mean that that's what's going to happen. I believe that the universe is a compassionate, ultimate being, that we are dealing with a system of evolution, and that what's happening right now is actually a marvelous consciousness shift. And if you can tap into that shift and actualize that consciousness for yourself, then you are actually becoming a real part of the evolution and the revolution, if you will. So it really just boils down to study more of the information, hear more of the stuff that I've done, particularly the Science of Peace series. I think you'll find that very useful. Go to my website, divinecosmos.com, read David's blog, read the articles section. There's a lot of stuff in there. There's readings I've done. Educate yourself. Educate yourself about the positive. Educate yourself about the fact that this is not doom and gloom. This is a real change. It's happening. It's evolving us. It's the most grandiose moment in human history. It's happening now. You can be a part of it just by tuning in, taking some deep breaths, having a positive outlook about the future, and realizing that this is the single greatest moment in our history. We are moving into something unprecedented. All the shadow material is coming up at this time to be cleansed and healed and renewed. You don't have to live in fear. You don't have to live in a sense of foreboding. If you tune into a positive reality, that will become your reality. And my life is living proof of that. I have experienced it myself, and I can tell you that you can do the same. So I thank you for listening to this audio blog. I hope you have a great day, and I hope you can share this with some others and maybe even have a study group and listen to this together. And if that's what you're doing, then I welcome you to discuss this further, because every person's opinion matters. Every person's opinion counts. So let's just move forward with positive focus. And I thank you so much for listening. It's been a real pleasure to sit down today with you and be able to speak with you about this. Thank you so much, and God bless.